Robert Hass is Poet Laureate of the United States, but he is working to polish his reputation for environmental activism. At his invitation, some of the country's top nature writers and poets are here in Washington this week for an event called Watershed: Writers, Nature, and Community. It's being called a celebration of our relationship to the environment. Hass says the celebration carries on an American tradition, especially in literature.
In a way, this tradition of trying to figure out our relationship to the land, a tradition of love of the land, a sense of the connection between work and community and the natural world is the deepest thing in the American imagination. It's certainly one of the deepest things in our literature. And I think right now we're going through tremendous flowering of that tradition of writing. There are so many interesting writers working in the tradition of Thoreau and of John Muir and of Thomas Jefferson. Notes from the State of Virginia may be one of the first books in this tradition.
Well, you invited some of my favorites, Wendell Berry from my native Kentucky, and Gary Snyder, and NPR's Berta May Grosvenor, and it's a good group.
Yeah, it's a wonderful collection of people. One evening, there was a reading which we called Dirt Rich African-American Writers on the American Earth. And it was fascinating in any number of ways, and one of them is the persistent view in the world, or in part of the world, that the environmental tradition writing is white and elitist. And to hear the singer and poet Rachel Bagby conjure this whole tradition of the blues and the whole tradition of the spiritual that arises out of American work and the sense of place was really moving.
Well, that's been said not only about environmental writing, but about Earth Day and the environmental movement in general.
It's ironic in a number of ways that the reading and the talk the other night brought out. One of them is, of course, that the urban poor, among whom are many African Americans and people of color, are the ones who suffer most from the degradation of the environment when it's degraded in our cities. Yeah, as in Washington, D.C., where the Anacostia River, which is one of the dirtiest urban rivers in the country, flows right through some of the poorest neighborhoods in this great seat of power.
And you took these riders canoeing
On the Anacostia River. It can be a very dirty river, and it's polluted by human sewage.
You're turning this into something else. You would like an environmental curriculum in the schools.
We wanted this event to happen in Washington, but I was trying to think about how to get it out into the world. And one of the things that we did, the Poetry and Literature Office, together with the International River Network, was sponsor a national art and poetry contest for children on the theme of watersheds, with the idea that if you're going to begin to have environmental education in the schools, that would be the backbone of such an education. You'd figure out what watershed you were on, what your bioregion was, and as we said in our posters, you learn your ecological address. We got 5,000 or more poems and paintings from kids all over the country, picked national winners, and bringing 8 kids, 4 poets and 4 young artists to Washington to show their work and to read their poems. It was a wonderful experience. I didn't read all 5,000 of them, but I got to read the last of the poems. And I have to say that often the people who got educated were the young environmental type poets who were having to judge these contests, because the kids' imaginations came right out of their lives. There was one poem in which a child in Washington asked to imagine himself if he were a raindrop. The poem went something like, "If I were a raindrop, I would definitely want to fall on the street, because if I fell in a river, I would drown, and I would be drowning alive. And if I fell on the back of a dog, it might be eating me, and it would be eating me alive. And if I fell on a fence, I might fall off the fence and break my arm and have to go to the hospital. But if I landed in the street, I might trickle home. So that's the kind of raindrop I would be. There was no celebration of Purple Mountain's majesty. You know, it came right out of the anxieties of their real experience.
Robert Hass, the U.S. Poet Laureate and a professor of English at the University of California at Berkeley.
I want to read a poem of mine that's a local poem of place from the late spring in Northern California. Spring rain. Now the rain is falling freshly in the intervals between sunlight. A Pacific squall started no one knows where, drawn east as the drifts of warm air make a channel. It moves its own way, like water or the mind, and spills this rain passing over the Sierras will catch it as last snow flurries before summer, observed only by the wakened marmots at 10,000 feet. And we will come across it again as larkspur and penstem and sprouting along a creek above Sonora Pass next August, where the snowmelt will have trickled into Dead Man's Creek, and the creek spilled into the Stanislaus River, and the Stanislaus into the San Joaquin, and the San Joaquin into the slow salt marshes of San Francisco Bay. That's not the end of it. The gray jays of the mountains eat larkspur seeds, which can't propagate otherwise. To simulate the process, you have to soak gathered seeds all night in the acids of old coffee and then score them gently with a very sharp knife before you plant them in the garden. You might use what was left of the coffee we drank in Lisa's kitchen, visiting. There were orange poppies on the table in a clear glass vase stained near the bottom to the color of sunrise. The unstated theme was the blessedness of gathering and the blessing of dispersal. It made you glad for beauty like that, casual and intense, lasting as long as poppies last.